Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
Eighty-two days until the general, 84 minutes until the Roy Blunt bus tour rolls into Bowling Green in Missouri.
Did we find out?
They're going to be at Perry Agricultural Laboratory in Bowling Green.
Yeah.
And then they will be at Hannibal, and I don't have the exact location on hand for Hannibal. They will be there 2:30. Let's send a group text and figure out if we know where Roy Blunt's going to be in Hannibal.
We should be able to figure this out.
That when he arrives today.
Shouldn't be that tough of a info get to get. You just came from the newsroom. Does the newsroom not...
You know, I had so many irons in the fire that question wasn't even on the board. The part of the show today has been submarined by our own technology here in the building. So this is, you know, I'm in a little bit of a snit right now. So Roy Blunt, Bowling Green, 11:30. This afternoon, I was trying to confirm. We've had James Hearson on the show before, mm-hmm. and it was looking like he was going to do the show today based on an article that he wrote about media coverage and this presidential campaign cycle. And I thought it was going to be very interesting. And I was sending the reply, and our Wi-Fi network that we have here to cover us while we're working does not like my iPhone. And it would not, I thought I replied to that email an hour ago. To confirm, and I looked down as I was walking into the studio.
Was it
and
still sending?
I had a message said, unable to be sent. So I turned off the Wi-Fi, and it went right through.
Mm.
But, of course, now it's showtime, and he's promised himself to other outlets.
Yeah.
So that's just what it's going to be. We have Continental Cement is going to be the arrival point for Roy Blunt when he gets to Hannibal at 2:30 this afternoon.
Continental
Cement.
All right.
Are you doing a GPS search right now?
That's what I'm doing.
Okay, we're going to need latitude and longitude.
How will the address work?
Okay, plebe. While you're doing that, it is a big day today at the Illinois State Fair. Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair. And this
It's on 79.
Already gotten a little bit squirrely.
It's on 79.
All right. If you're heading that way, you want to visit with Senator Roy Blunt, just throw Continental Cement in the GPS and hopefully it'll get you there. That nice British woman's voice will come on and tell you where to go.
If you choose her.
That's right. I think that's the default setting, is it not?
Yeah, south of town on 79. So that's your goal.
And that would be the easy get to from Bowling Green as you're coming right up. You'll be south of Hannibal already.
Well, you'll have to get on. You'll have to jog over. I mean, I guess you have to jog over 61 to 79 at some point. So, mm-hmm. Sure, I guess.
Yep. All right. Well, that's coming up. We'll try and remind you again before we're done this morning. But we've got a lot to get to this morning. Dwayne Lester is traveling. He's trying to carve out some time to join us here on the show as well. And we'll be getting into, of course, a ton of Missouri issues tomorrow. So we'll just see how this flows as it's sort of like. In my mind, this is sort of like operating an informational lock and dam, and you thought it was going to be filled up, and then you would open it in release, and some of the things you were counting on filling up with it just didn't come downstream. That's where we're at as we get this started. It is Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair. This is, without a doubt, Governor Rauner's chance to hold court, so to speak, over this. Yes, Mark Kirk is there. He's changed his mind three times on whether he's going to go or not, but he eventually went. We'll see whether or not he continues to do Kirk-splaining on whether or not he's going to get behind a viable presidential candidate. The answer largely looks like no right now. According to those who are there at the... What are you doing?
I'm trying to use the equipment as well. The pre-show video apparently is not all the way uploaded and it's hanging up. So I'm looking for a spot that it will continue to upload.
We need a live camera in the studio.
Something. I'm waving my phone around right now looking for a good place.
I thought you were giving me a digital benediction there.
No. I learned a while ago that when you're trying to upload a video, you need to find a sweet spot. And that's currently what I'm doing. And I'm not having any luck.
So you're moving within a three-dimensional reality,
yes,
trying to find a hot spot.
And I'm in a cold zone.
You are a technology cold
again.
Zone.
Again, well, look, you stumbled on it earlier. I'm now stumbling as well. It's two strikes.
Two strikes.
Us versus tech in the building.
Two strikes.
We're
indeed
losing, and badly.
Well, they went full Luddite at the Illinois State Fair this morning when people started coming in and lining up for the pre-events. I mentioned it's Republican Day at the State Fair. Everybody who hit that lineup was handed a term limits now button with a pic of a very young Mike Madigan on it. I don't know if it was... I don't know if it was the pick from like the very first time he ran for office or what, but he's a very young Mike Madigan on the button. The Illinois GOP put out a release to, quote, explain that button, saying that he's been a career politician for 45 years, Illinois House Speaker for 30 years. This is all known. So we'll see where this goes. Term limits, it's just an excuse for laziness on voters. That's all it is. If you want Mike Madigan out of office, find someone and develop a candidate to run and win against him.
It is, well, it is the workaround for a majority of the populace who can't be bothered with what's going on.
Yes, it's a crutch. It's laziness.
And we've had Ben Yount, you know, explain this to us time and time again. Mike Madigan has taken care of his district, and they like him. Now, that doesn't mean that he won't, you know, go the extra mile to make sure that nobody even trifles with his fiefdom. We saw, and he's being sued right now over that. So, you know, he doesn't want that position challenged, and he'll do whatever he has to do to protect it. I would imagine, despite the fact that this apparently has his confirmation picture on it, that if it moves any further, that he's got plans in place to make sure that term limits don't get passed as well.
That would be sort of an Illinois Republican dream, wouldn't it? You have the focal point for that legislation, marshaling his long accrued power to quash that legislation. Here's the problem, is that term limits limit good government as likely as they limit bad.
Right.
And as much as we rail against government being too large and out of control on this show, there is such a thing as good government. We don't have a picture of it right now in this country, maybe in Texas, maybe. We don't have a picture of good government to look at right now and say this is what it is. Certainly not at the federal level, certainly not at the state level in the land of Lincoln. But there is such a thing as good government, and term limits limit that once you achieve it as likely as they are to limit bad government. And while I am completely anti-term limit at the ballot box, I would be in favor of something that would suggest you could only hold an office like Speaker of the House for so many terms. You could, because you're, whether or not you're in the legislature remains up to the voters in your district. They can continue sending you there. You can just only do the job as Speaker for X amount of terms.
Okay.
I would be in favor of those sorts of intra-legislative body limits.
Okay.
You can only be, whip so many times. You could only be the minority leader so many times. Yes, you'll still be the minority party, but somebody else would have to fill that role. Those sort of intra-legislative curbs I would be in favor of. But actually limiting how many times someone could be elected in their district, no, that's just laziness.
And I understand your point, and it's odd that you and Mike Madigan are on the same page here, but give me that arbitrary number that somebody could be Speaker?
I'd say 2 terms. Just make it easy.
Okay. Two terms as Speaker.
2 terms for whatever the value of their office is. So if you get elected every 2 years, you have to run like a representative, that'd be 4 years total.
Okay. So then the electing of the Speaker would have to be within that branch.
Sure.
Because
you still have the majority.
It couldn't go to seniority.
Right. So let's just say Democrats still have the majority. They get the speakership. It would just be another Democrat.
Right. And I get that. And maybe down the road, if people were taking turns, there might be a variance in how stuff gets done. But if all of a sudden your idea got implemented, is there any doubt in your mind that if Mike Madigan didn't have the label of Speaker upon him, that he still wouldn't wield power?
No, but what you can do is prevent that kind of accumulation in the future going forward. You're not going to be able to erase his fiefdom because he's been allowed to acquire it over 4 decades. But what you're trying to do is prevent another one going forward, another tyrant going forward.
Because essentially what we're looking at right now is Madigan's going to have to die or have some debilitating health situation befall him before he's ever going to not be in control.
That's not something that I'm advocating for.
I'm just saying it's that.
But yes, he's come to a point in his career that so long as he continues to exist, he's going to have that kind of influence.
I would also say, and we've talked about this before, that if you do have term limits, what you're doing then is you're moving the power infrastructure off of a particular seat or a particular person, and you're moving it behind the scenes.
Yes. Yeah. Once you
and
initiate
those behind
term
the scenes
limits,
positions and people who are putting that infrastructure aren't elected.
Right. And this is the big, and I was going to get there. I'm glad you bridged us to it right away. That's the big worry for me and why I'm anti-term limit, is because as soon as you term limit someone, as soon as you put that into position, now the power brokers are the unelected bureaucratic staff that run the Capitol, that are the aides to the office. They're the ones who really know everything, and they're advising, and they have an unelected power to run government at that point.
If you don't like lobbyists, if you don't like behind-the-scenes deals, all of a sudden they would proliferate. Mm-hmm. They would be much more meaningful, impactful, and carry a lot more weight. But term limits are two words that get people's attention. And I understand Sean's position is it's lazy to not, you say, well, I don't have to worry about being up on what's going on individuals. I can just let the system take care of itself, which mm-hmm. it will.
Mm-hmm.
The system likes to take care of itself because mm-hmm. then it doesn't have to worry about you intervening with itself, taking care of itself. No, it's a responsibility to vote and be a part of a society where you elect people, and voting them out is part of that responsibility.
It might be Churchill's second most famous line. The first, of course, was another round. But after that, it was the price of freedom is no less than eternal vigilance. So you have to participate. You have to be aware. You can't pass on that responsibility to someone else and expect a result in which your ends are held up. Might it occasionally work and overlap? Sure. But that's not enough in order to have good government. You were mentioning yesterday, we were talking with Ben Yount, and you mentioned that I wanted to... Was that when you mentioned that I wanted to go back to landowners-only voting? Which
Sean,
isn't correct.
But
there's a variation
on that.
It
was when he was
talking
about having to pass a test
yes.
to be able to vote,
yes.
and I said, Sean's for this.
Yes, and basically, and those two things... And I'm coming back to this because term limits has so much to do with voting and participation. There are two tests that I say should be put in place before you can vote. And that is a very simple literacy test so that you can understand the language of the ballot. If you can't read and understand what you're voting on, you shouldn't be voting. And number two, if you're on any kind of taxpayer-funded assistance, I don't believe you should be allowed to vote, because
really
we saw this with the founders. Their biggest fear was an overextension of aid. And then once people know that the line is, once people know they can vote themselves the treasury, it's the end of democracy.
Yeah.
So if your only vote is your interest in taking other people's stuff, that's not democracy anymore.
And we've gotten to a place where...
where the entire Democrat machine
that's the
runs
pitch.
On the idea that we'll give you other people's stuff.
Right.
So that's in my mind, those are the only two things, not race, creed, color, sex, religious affiliation. I don't care about those. Those are the opportunities that we have in this country. If you can't understand the ballot language, and if you're taking taxpayer assistance... no vote for you.
Wow.
In Sean's Republic.
I understand what you're saying. There are some people out there giving you some huzzas. There are also people, I'm sure, that our email inbox being filled up with...
It's not forever.
Well, no, because you shouldn't be on that assistance forever.
Right. Once you're off that assistance for 6 months...
it's not designed for you to be on it forever.
Voting rights restored. Yeah. You know, so that's that, and it's another encouragement to become self-sufficient and get off of the public safety net, public welfare.
Again, voting being a privilege.
Absolutely. And it should be considered the highest privilege in the land, because then it gets back to what? Self-determination, what this nation is all about. So I think it's a very reasonable request that has less than a snowball's chance in hell of actually being considered.
Boy, something suspicious. Take it back to the beginning of the show. Something suspicious going on tech-wise here at the building. Because all of a sudden, I threw my phone and the pre-show video magically got uploaded in like 90 seconds. So
First of all, let's stop being so generous in calling that a smartphone. It's a paperweight.
This is a company issued.
It's a paperweight.
And I've taken care of it to the best of my ability, to the point where...
which is why you haven't gotten an upgrade.
Which is I threw it. And the pre-show video, which I, by the way, started shooting at like 25 till, still hadn't uploaded after the show had begun. And you mentioned you were having trouble with the Wi-Fi, so I decided to check it, and I was stuck on 6%. Started waving my arms around, and that's when you started making fun of me, and I was looking for somewhere that wasn't a cold zone. I just threw my phone over near Josh. I checked it. A couple of minutes ago, magically, video uploaded. So you can check it out now.
Well, number one, Josh is a hotspot when it comes to teching things around here. He does it well both on and off campus for us. And two, Kinetic Energy. You supplied the Kinetic Energy in order to get that uploaded. All right.
Be careful. That can be taxed.
We'll finish our thoughts on Illinois issues with Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair. Mark Kirk is there. A litany of speakers are going to take on Dick Durbin and his... hinting dalliance, flirtation with running for governor.
Donald Trump had overnight a shakeup. That's a word a lot of people
are using. On the back half.
Okay.
All right, we're only going to have a few minutes to wrap up the Illinois thoughts. We'll be talking Missouri with Aaron Baker tomorrow for Maxim Strategy. We'll wrap up a couple other things that Illinois Republicans are doing or planning to do at the fair today on Republican Day next on the morning meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
This is how in deep media is with the Democratic power brokers in the state of Illinois. Headline from the State Journal Register: Governor Rauner bypasses legislature to create Illinois State Fair Fundraising Foundation. You can hear the anger in the screaming headline. That's right. Governor Rauner is setting up the 501c3 organization to raise money from the private sector to help pay for the estimated $180 million worth of just deferred maintenance at the state fairgrounds, because the legislature's done such a great job running it. Democrats came out right away and said, this is a bad idea. It's going to allow this body to get around our purchasing bylaws, i.e. they're going to take the purse strings away from the legislature. So we just can't get out of our own way in the state of Illinois.
And don't think that this is a public statement. Don't think that behind the scenes they're not giggly about this, because what it does is it sets a precedent for whenever there's a Democrat in the governor's seat, that this card is in the deck. Not that, a Democrat would want private business, you know, to be the end around, but the end around itself.
Hat tip to Rich Miller at Capital Facts. He's got an early story up from Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair today. He is told by some of his contacts there that U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who's been kind of openly flirting with a run against Governor Rauner for governor in 2018, that Durbin will be the target of several Republican speeches today. What is being described behind the scenes as Durbin's, quote, mountains of baggage. He screwed up in D.C. for 30 years, and he thinks he's qualified to fix the state. Oh, and did you notice this is more of a quote from Rich Miller's unnamed insider, anonymous insider. Oh, and did you know, by the way, how Durbin embarked upon this navel-gazing exercise for governor? He made sure to stop by the real power first and kiss Madigan's ring. So it's a little, the vitriol is flowing already.
What on God's green earth could Dick Durbin do in Springfield that Pat Quinn, Rod Blagojevich, Mike Madigan haven't already done? Or what would he do that's different that would all of a sudden make it better?
Well, he could tell you that, you know, he could fix it with all of his big federal Dem buddies. You know, President Obama's going to need something to do after he's done. You've got Harry Reid, who's available. So he could be, you know, Durbin was seen as the number two guy behind Reid.
We've got, so we've got friends.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to tout that line. Ask before you're like,
So he's just more connected.
Yeah. Just ask yourself, how well has that liberal policy agenda gone for the country with our near 0% financial or economic growth, with the U.S. dollar starting to fall right now? If we don't see some growth and we continue down this path, there are many financial experts in and outside of this country who can see the value of the dollar falling because you've got a mountain of debt. You've got an administration that has believed in quantitative easing, just printing more money.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that the U.S. dollar is still the benchmark, in my mind, tells you that it's fear of change that's leading the world economy right now. If we were still on the gold standard, I would understand that. But we're a confidence economy, which means our dollar is only worth as much as people believe it is. And with soaring debt, loss of assets, out-of-control domestic spending, people are soon going to be seeing what we're seeing here inside, and that's that dollar's really not worth as much as you think around the world.
You're describing what people in the business call a bubble.
Absolutely, and it's not even tinfoil hat day.
No, bubble's a real thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Jeff Kennedy will tell you.
I'm not even, you know, just getting crazy about it. I'm not even going like super conspiracy. This is just the economic signs that you see there.
Now, this is where, what, you tell everybody to buy gold?
Oh, if they were a sponsor on the show, I would. Meanwhile, Mark Kirk is at the...
That's an invitation, by the way.
Wide open. Silver, copper, pretty much anything at this point.
Precious metals.
Mark Kirk has made his way to the state fair today. Kirk has acknowledged that he's been, quote, all over the map on who he would support for president, but he returned last night to saying that he is going to vote for David Petraeus. David Petraeus, who respected globally as a leader, was burned at the stake for an infraction that Hillary Clinton wouldn't even get a slap on the wrist for. You think there's not two sets of rules for the Clintons and the rest of the world? Mm-hmm. This is a well-respected American general, respected on the world stage. He did something that, by comparison, was nothing. And they burned him at the stake in his entire career to satisfy the view of the fact that they're tough on people who are lax with information, and yet Hillary, nothing. You have the director of the FBI as her excuse maker. So if you think something isn't fishy there, you don't have to look any further than what happened to Petraeus.
And we're not even done. I mean, we thoroughly don't know the extent of those misdeeds. We know that a bunch of stuff got deleted, that stuff was missing. We don't know the extent of
her misdeeds. Yeah,
right. So we can't even fully, I don't think we can compare, but it isn't complete. The comparison, until we know all of that, and we should, it's ours. Hello, public. This is our stuff. These are public servants. I don't care if it was on a private server. It should have been on, you know, government server. That was the whole point. Until we know all of that, we can't even compare fairly apples to, it's not even fruits to fruits or fruits and vegetables yet.
So what are you comparing it to?
You can't. It's apples to X.
Until you know the extent of the damage that was done. You're right about that, depressing as it is. Quaid alluded to it earlier. Big shakeup in the Trump campaign last night. We'll take you behind the scenes on what happened and why it may not help. That's next on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. Still to come on the show, interesting end time scenario.
What?
Being paid for to play out at the University of Illinois with tax dollars and the search for something I believe doesn't exist.
I don't know what you just said, little kid.
we'll get to those hopefully both before the end of the show today. What is the, oh, that was just creepy. I don't want to do that right now. I'll get sidetracked. That's for later.
Yeah, so let's save the creepy for after the show.
Yeah. No. Creepy might make the show, but it'll just be at the end.
That's a good way to finish it up.
You know. Let's
get creepy. Goodbye, everybody.
That's our calling card here.
Check
on
you tomorrow.
Meeting. Republican Donald Trump shook up his campaign leadership last night. What do you say? Tumultuous leadership that can't find their footing, or a needed change to pivot his image as we head down toward the general?
He doesn't want to pivot. Manafort has been the one who has been promising everybody since his elevation that Trump was going to rein it in, be more presidential. Manafort's word was pivot. That's what he used for the last couple of months since Corey Lewandowski got the heave-ho and Manafort got elevated within the campaign. And then Trump goes out and gives the foreign policy speech that the majority of the people are saying, now this is what we want, but Trump apparently would rather just go out and talk as opposed to have something pre-written that he's reading off the teleprompter. So now Manafort is being pushed back down, his role is being diminished, and we have Roger Ailes, who just got the boot at Fox News, jumping into the Trump campaign, and Steve Bannon.
Steve Bannon of Breitbart News is now the CEO of the Trump campaign, and he must like the work that one of his main pollsters is doing, because promoting a pollster, you're not going to know this name, but Kellyanne Conway to campaign manager. Manafort still is the, quote, campaign chairman. But if you've got a CEO and a campaign manager, what's the campaign chairman seems a lot like cutting ribbons and kissing babies.
Make sure you got the right number of posters and make sure they're distributed properly.
Make sure you can call in the shows you're supposed to be on.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't remember this happening. This is, what, the second time we've had a shakeup like this?
Well, sure, because it started with Lewandowski.
You know,
and then had the Manafort come in, and I'll use this because this is a billionaire business term, hostile takeover of the campaign.
Okay. It just seems like is somebody shooting this for a reality show? Because it just seems like there's extra drama.
You're asking if on the run-up to the general election for president, if the country is being punked.
It seems like lines are being blurred here.
And he was Canadian.
And you have a candidate who's done, reality TV previously.
You bring up a good
strange
point.
Strange times indeed.
You bring up a good point in that Trump's most personal relationship with media has been the success of his shows, his reality TV shows. Is that coloring the decision-making that he's making to run a presidential campaign? Because it certainly feels like this is being run with a reality TV mentality. It's almost political campaign director survivor who gets voted off the director's council, every 90 days or so. Lewandowski was victim number one.
Yeah. We're going to have to extinguish your tiki torch. Mm-hmm. So, if Trump approaches it from that perspective, there's a part of me that understands because that's what he knows. He's not going to approach it as a political animal.
He doesn't need to approach it as a political animal, but just with more savvy than an episode of MTV's Road Rules Challenge would be great.
But
and why not listen? I get the sense now that he is listening to people, but he's got short, and this is, I don't have any insider information on this. He feels like somebody with short attention span.
But yes, and it goes towards stability.
Because yes, very much so.
If you get elected president, you can't just swap people in and out of the cabinet, based on a couple of months here and there.
Right,
Court.
You can't do anything that. Else, yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that kind of leaves me ill at ease. Then you have the whole angle of these are two high-level media people. And what have we bemoaned for years and years and years? And it is the uncomfortable relationship between the political party in power, and I'm talking about the Democrats, and the connections that they have to the media that seem overly friendly. Now, there are those who will make the argument that this is just trying to battle back, to
fight fire with fire,
to gain some space on the risk board. But
why isn't it fight water with water, by the way?
I don't know. It's a deep thought, Sean. I don't know.
So, but you're right. This might just be the chance to retake the Ural Mountains on the risk board.
But if we as citizens are uncomfortable with the administration having uncomfortably close ties to mass media, why would we be comfortable? And I understand that Roger Ailes is out, but don't think that there aren't people who still listen to him.
Well, that's the point I was going to bring. If you're bringing in a Roger Ailes, you're bringing it in for a specific skill set. And if you're not going to listen to and act upon his advice in his arena of expertise, what's the point? So I expect to see a change in not only how Trump interacts with the media, but I look for a little different tone in his messaging. The Trump campaign did say they're starting to buy ads in five battleground states. So it'll be interesting when those commercials, those campaign messages start coming out, if they're going to be different. Obviously, those were made prior to this move, so input might not be there. But look at these and then look at things down the road. You're also going to see longer form things online, on YouTube, where you can go and see more about the candidate. Look at those to have a little different tone, I think,
We're
82 days out.
When we talk about, getting someone elected, that's certainly you're going to see a change in how that goes about. The Bannon thing has people, I think, at this point in time more worried than the Ailes hire. I'm not sure. Did Bannon step down at Breitbart? Has he relinquished his position there? Or has he just kind of sidestepped to a not such a high-profile position?
There's no direct mention of that in this story. But I'm getting the feeling that he didn't step down, that he may just be on sabbatical from there while he works on campaign.
All
so right. We'll see how that goes.
It's just interesting bedfellows, and if you're on the conservative side of things, and like we said, the having those bedfellows on the left makes you uncomfortable. There's a part of me that gets you saying, yes, we can put our infrastructure in place, but if it's bad, it's bad.
My question on this is how much of it is being done on the political front foot versus the back foot? I feel like it's because Trump feels the campaign's reeling. It feels reactionary to me instead of proactive.
Yeah, again, that goes back to the stability part of it. But again, just a couple of days after what many consider to be his best speech.
Yes.
And so instead of building on something, you immediately start, and I won't say deconstruct, but shift away.
Getting back to a quote that Ronald Reagan was famous for, he was referencing immigrants at the time. He said, most of them are Republicans. They just don't know it yet. And it's getting to that where I think Trump is trying to make inroads amongst the African-American community and Latino community. Mm-hmm. Fox News did a new Latino poll, and their findings are that Trump has deepened the wedge between the GOP and Latinos.
Really?
Yeah. So that's interesting. Again, that's a Fox poll, not a CNN or, Daily Kos or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
Or Mother Jones. That's a Fox poll saying that he has deepened the wedge between Republicans and Latinos. And then Trump comes out and just goes scorched earth on Hillary. The Democratic Party has failed and betrayed the African-American community. It's time to break with the failures of the past. He's addressing the riots in Milwaukee
yeah.
over the weekend. I think there's a lot of uncomfortable truth to that. I think there is there's a reluctance to admit it, but there is a very necessary component of Democratic success. We talked about it earlier with being willing to promise the Treasury, and that's the big overarching term for public tax dollars and things like that, to minority groups, not just African Americans, but because they've been the largest minority group in the country, they kind of get used as the faceplate for that. And you have a mindset amongst the liberal populace that really has, I think, taken the will away from those who are too much reliant upon government help and social welfare programs. What they're essentially saying by continuing to expand those is that you don't have the ability to do for yourself. We have to take care of you. So and as much heat as Ellen got for the joke on the Twitter,
Usain Bolt,
about her being given a piggyback ride by Usain Bolt when she said, this is how I'm going to get my errands done by now. You could put liberal Democrats on the back of the African-American voter, and that's how they get into office.
Yeah, you could send that meme out.
Yeah, you're literally riding that African-American vote into office.
You would get lambasted for it, but you could put it out there.
Well, the numbers are there. They can't lambast you for it. Over two-thirds of African-American voters routinely vote Democrat.
Oh, it's more than that.
Well, that's the national average. You go south of the Mason-Dixon line, it skyrockets to like 88 in some places. But the national average is well above two-thirds. I'm saying two-thirds because I know I'm right there. It could be three-quarters. I just don't have the numbers in front of me right now.
I thought it was higher.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. But when you have that minimum, I mean, there is no rebuke to that. That's you're specifically tailoring your message to a certain subset of the country in order to win that support, and getting intelligent people to realize that they have been given the short end of the stick on a policy level is a tough sell. It is an extremely tough sell.
Well, especially when it's been a generational
absolutely
message and position to change is hard. And when you have to reverse or shake away the walls that have been built up around you, even if you've built them, you know, that's not an easy thing to break those things and get a new perspective.
And if you charge right into the heart of the matter, you get called a race baiter if you remind everyone that the Democrats were the party who fought to keep slavery in this country.
And
that it was the Republican Party who fought to end slavery.
Yeah, that's the Dinesh D'Souza movie, wasn't it? The most recent one? It was Hillary's America. Is that the new one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right. That's what's going on behind the scenes in the Trump campaign. We'll get deep into that and its ramifications with Craig Robinson, the Iowa Republican, on Friday. Coming up, creepy to end the show here on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
All right, let's go ahead and get the creepy out of the way. Just a couple minutes left. A few interesting quick hits I want to get to at the end of the show. U.S. medical schools are seeing a huge upsurge in the number of people leaving their bodies to science. That now, trend this is the creepy. Because some people see that as kind of ghoulish, right? Well, you leave your body and they're going to experiment on you, dissect you, that kind of thing.
For those who are unaware, this is far different than being an organ donor.
Yes.
Okay. That was you fill out on the back of your license that when you die, you got harvestable organs that can go to people who need them, who are in need. That's one thing.
Nobody's going to want my liver. I'm going to tell you that right now.
You're correct. In fact, sometimes you don't want your liver. This is saying whatever university or something.
Whoever you donate to, medical school or something like that.
Essentially signing your whole body over to them for study, not to be used, you know, for somebody who could use your parts.
Right.
For study.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's many people are revolted.
You could leave your liver for people to
study. I told you on a scale of 1 to 10 of creepy, this was a 1.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just, you know, it was described as a little creepy. Medical students and researchers dissect cadavers in anatomy classes, practice surgery techniques, which is good because you don't want you or a loved one to be first time in for the surgeon, right?
Right.
Right? So, you know, this is just
so the question then is, are you going to leave your liver for scientists?
Oh, yeah, they're going to cut up little shards of it and have it on slides next to Einstein's brain. What are you talking about? The University of Illinois has received $18.5 million federal dollars in a grant to help develop a way to test the U.S.'s potential response and recovery from an attack on our country's electrical grid.
Well, we should probably be testing
infrastructure
things like
attacks.
This.
Yes, this is something
worthwhile.
That's coming from DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Awarded that grant. An associate professor named Timmy Yardley is the guy in charge of that. Former Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling is weighing a run against Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Hey, hey! Mm-hmm. Now there's something.
Put the bloody sock back on and let's get back to work. You want to talk about it? He doesn't have the profile of a Donald Trump, but Schilling, I think, probably a smoother communicator. He, for years, worked for ESPN, and I thought he was very good.
Beloved in the sports community in Beantown. I
thought he was very good talking about the things he was expert at himself, with pitching, baseball, that sort of things. We'll see if this goes forward. That would be a very entertaining race. And, Quate, the search is back on for something I believe doesn't exist. Not a unicorn, not a Pegasus. Explorers in Poland are once again digging for the legendary Nazi gold train.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. This is, I think this is an urban myth that the Nazis hit a train laden with treasure and advanced weapons research that they were apparently doing at the end of the war.
What group is looking for this?
There's a group of explorers out of Poland. They don't have like a fun, you know, group name. So, yep.
They're not tied to we don't have a benefactor name or there's a university. It's just guys with shovels.
We're out of time. That's the name of the group. We'll see you tomorrow right here on The Morning Meeting.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.